All right, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Stefan Molyneux from freedomain.com, freedomain.com/donate to help out philosophy, the most important discipline in the world ever. And this is the best philosophy conversation not only the world has ever seen, the world is seeing, but that the world will ever see, because after this and because of this, everything is improved. But we are the first to break through the ice of superstition, relativism, subjectivism, and nihilism, and come to rational ethics and practical virtues. So, I was talking in a podcast recently about the false self, and I could feel my tentacles of brain, my brain tentacles, wrapping themselves around the topic, but not clenching it properly. Yeah, you know, you kind of, you know, when you just know you're going to throw the ball not quite too well, or in, if you've ever played racket sports, you know, with when you're just about to hit it, that it's not going to kind of go as well as you want. So I had that feeling for a variety of reasons. I'm not sure why. I'm only somewhat in control of my brain. It's a partnership. I ask, it offers, and sometimes I ask wrong, or it doesn't offer in the right way. So I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about the false self, because it's very important, very important. And hopefully we will get our tentacles all the way around it and squeeze the truth out of its innards and bone marrow. So the false self. So the false self is generated when honesty is punished in early childhood relationships, obviously parental and so on, right? So when honesty, authenticity, truth, and openness is punished, then you are not allowed to be yourself. You are not allowed to spontaneously express yourself. And you are given love for self-rejection, or at least you're given the appearance of love for self-rejection or self-control. And you are punished for the authentic and honest expression of your true thoughts and feelings. So a typical example would be if you're bitterly disappointed about something as a child, which, you know, is going to happen, then you will cry. And for a lot of parents, there's a certain amount of, okay, it's fine, you can cry. But then there's this sort of countdown, right? Like you're allowed to cry, but not for too long. Okay, that's enough. That's enough, right? If the authentic expression of your true feelings is met with hostility, impatience, resistance, contempt, anger, aggression, rejection, and so on, then you get the message that the honest expression of your true thoughts and feelings is a negative, which will get you punished. And that's the genesis or the beginning of the false self. If you are a child of religious parents and you express some level of skepticism regarding religion, then that is a sin and that is bad. And there may be some genial sort of superior sort of patience for a couple of questions. But if you keep asking questions, then that becomes unacceptable. And it's bad, and it's wrong, and so on, right? So where did God come from? Blah, 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 and so on, right? Or my prayers weren't answered. I don't know. I really asked, and nothing came back. Or, you know, I don't really feel what other people are feeling when they say they feel this stuff regarding religion or prayer or something. So if you're sort of honest about these things, you condescending, that's the word I was thinking of. I don't know why my brain is not working as well. I'm sure we'll get there. So there's this sort of condescending, okay, yeah, you can ask a couple of questions, sure. But if you continue to ask questions, then it becomes unacceptable and bad and wrong, right? So another typical example is you have Aunt Edna, and Aunt Edna is just kind of odd. You know, maybe she smells, maybe she doesn't take care of her teeth, maybe she's got a whole bunch of bristles on her chin that poke you when when she kisses you and so on. Like maybe there's just a bunch of stuff that is negative or odd or bad. Maybe her place smells, maybe she's got plastic on the couches or something like that. And your sense of oddness is kind of activated as a kid, right? This sort of uncanny valley stuff where somebody, you know, seems like a regular old person, but there's something awry or odd or strange about them. And you have that sort of instinct. And maybe you recoil from her a little bit. Or maybe you've got that uncle who's way too jovial and hearty and hugs too tight and is loud and so on. And there's something, I remember there was a man my daughter met when she was very young, who was like, hey, and it came in just like a battering ram of hypergeniality and so on. And he had a mustache, and there's actually Put a Rainbow on Me as a show. It's a song that she was singing when she was very little. And she said, I love, you know, my friends' names and so on. I love my friends. I love everybody, but not the men with mustaches. She was very, you know. And so her experience was that there was something negative about that interaction. And that is fine. I mean, I'm not going to tell her she's wrong. I mean, it's not necessarily an association with mustaches, but I'm certainly not going to say that she should have a positive experience when she is not having a positive experience, right? I'm not going to tell her she's wrong about that. She had a negative experience and so on, right? So also, I don't want to go to school. I don't like school. I don't want to go to school and so on. And then maybe, oh, why don't you want to go to school? Well, the teacher is mean. Well, maybe she's this. Like, so you're allowed, again, there's a certain amount of condescending disagreement that is not acted upon, but is solicited, if that makes sense, right? So, oh, why don't you like this? Or why don't you like Aunt Edna? Or, you know, why do you think God didn't answer your prayers? Or that kind of stuff, right? And well, sometimes God works in mysterious ways. And, right, so you get these kind of non-answers. I think the kids kind of understand that they're non-answers. And the kids aren't satisfied. And so you sort of have these thoughts and these feelings about people. Like, my mom had friends that I didn't like. They were complete oddballs. I don't know if you've spent much time or been around people who are just really disturbed, and everything goes through this weird filter, and you can never have any kind of direct connection with their personality, and everything is clammy and desperate and manipulative and bizarre and so on. Like, I remember she had a friend who was over one night when I was not particularly old. I was pretty young. And she was drunk, and she didn't want to, that she ended up being like a sleepover or something. Like, there was going to be a sleepover, and that was kind of inadvertent because she was drunk. And then she wouldn't go to bed, and she just, you know, it was just a mess. And she kept making all these crass jokes, and it was just strange and bad, and I did not enjoy it. Do not like, do not want, and so on. And so, as a result, what happened was I just didn't like her, didn't want to be around her, didn't want to do it, didn't want to have her over again, and so on. But of course, my mom was sort of desperate for distractions from her, the horrors of her own personality and history. And so I just had to sort of put up with it and deal with it. Oh, when my mom would date guys, and I didn't like the guys because I knew it was going to be like the guy would be over, and I would know that it would only be for a week or two or a month or two at best. And I didn't want to get to know them, and I didn't like them in particular, because, I mean, even though I was young, I was aware that these men were not interested in my mom because of the qualities of her personality or the robustness and virtue of her spirit, right? They were there because she was slim and pretty, right? That's what these men were there for. And so I didn't have any respect for the men, and didn't like them, and didn't want to get to know them. But of course, I was not in any way, shape, or form allowed to have any negative thoughts or experiences with regards to these men. I was not allowed to show any indifference or any, or God forbid, hostility, or like I had to smile and be nice, and I had to put on fake stuff. And if I didn't do that, then I would have been, of course, attacked and punished and so on, right? So it was not safe, in fact, it was very dangerous, to have my own thoughts or experiences or preferences. In fact, my mother also got quite mad, very mad at me, when I got into philosophy, and in particular with regards to objectivism. And she got mad because she said, you know, I felt that you replaced me with philosophy, or you, Ayn Rand, you replaced me with Ayn Rand, or something like that, right? Which is obviously kind of strange to think about, even in hindsight. It's like, well, if I'm not able to get any food, then I'm going to have to get food somewhere else, right? So if my mother is not cooking for me and there's no food in the house, then I'm going to have to find food somewhere else. And then, well, I feel like you're just replacing me with so-and-so's mom who feeds you. It's like, well, if you fed me, then I wouldn't need to go and get my food elsewhere, right? So given that I was not getting any moral instruction at home, in fact, quite the opposite, everything was modeled terribly. And I very much remember, being 11 or so, and I got angry and frustrated at something, and I had a little car track, like these little plastic car tracks that would go together, and you'd get your car, and you'd put it in the little slot, and the electricity would go to the car, and the car would go around. And I got frustrated or angry because I don't think the car slots were working, and I twisted and pulled them apart. And I remember going to my mom and saying, you know, I have this frustration or this anger, like, what should I do? Because I wanted to get some feedback, and I got absolutely nothing of utility. And of course, going to my mother for help on anger was not wise. Let's just put it that way. Not wise. So I couldn't even be honest about any of that. I was very much into Pink Floyd's album, The Wall, and nobody ever asked me why would such a morbid and macabre album be of interest to me, and none of my friends, none of my friends' parents, and so on. And I mentioned this in a call-in show recently, like I was drawing zombie heads with hanging eyeballs and torn out teeth and cheeks hanging and blood everywhere and so on, repeatedly. On my friend's blackboard in his basement, and people were around and so on, and nothing, like no curiosity, no questions, no nothing. So it's not just within the house that the false self has to be erected, right? Because it is in society as a whole that the false self is needed, right? Because society as a whole doesn't want to hear about your difficulties or your troubles. That's sort of certainly maybe it's a white male thing or something like that, but society as a whole does not want to hear about your difficulties and your troubles and your problems. And the teachers don't want to hear about your difficulties at home, and your friends don't want to hear about your difficulties at home, and your friends' parents don't want to hear about your difficulties at home, and certainly your own immediate parents or even your distant parents, as the case with me, with my father in Africa, did not want to hear about my troubles at home. Your aunts, your uncles don't want to hear about your troubles at home, right? So nobody wants to hear about your troubles at home. So at home, you have to fake what you think and feel in order to gain security from punishment, at least in the short run. And also out in society, you have to pretend to be better than you are doing, because otherwise you will be marked, attacked, ostracized, and rejected. Like if you go to school and you're depressed and hollowed out and frightened and screwed up and so on, well, you have to hide all of that because then you become like the weirdo kid. So you have to put on this mask of normalcy in order to have any access to friends, right? Because you're desperate to get out of your house, but you can't get out of your house without social contacts. And if you're honest about what's going on in your house, then you can't go over to friends' places because they'll think you're weird. And there was some extremely weird stuff going on in my house, like seriously, dangerously weird stuff going on in my house, stuff I haven't even talked about. Doesn't matter too much. I'm sure you can guess the content. But there was some really dangerous, weird, bad, creepy stuff going on in my house, and I can't talk about it. Because if I talk about it, then I'm going to be ostracized by friends, and then I have to go home more. I don't want to go home more. So you have to pretend to be cool and fun and funny. And it's not like I wasn't cool and fun and funny. There was that aspect to things for sure, but it's not particularly real in its sort of essentials. It's not particularly real in its essentials, and it's not particularly real over time, because there are times when some really bad negative stuff would happen and it would be, you know, shocking and difficult and dangerous, and I couldn't say anything. My friends never asked, my friends' parents never asked, teachers never asked, priests never asked, extended family never asked, my father never asked. So you just had to shut up and swallow it, and then pretend in many ways to be the opposite of who you were and what was happening. The only thing that I could sort of imagine is, I'm trying to think of a good way to put it. It would be like if you went to school with fire ants in your underpants. I know this sounds kind of goofy, but just imagine, like for real, you had fire ants in your underpants and you couldn't say to anyone or reveal to anyone or have anyone even guess that there were fire ants in your underpants. What you had to do was pretend there were no fire ants in your underpants, but you couldn't even do that, because that would be to acknowledge but pretend otherwise. You had to pretend there was no such thing in the universe as fire ants, even though they're crawling around your nether regions, you know, biting your testicles and your butt and so on, right? Crawling under your foreskin and all. So you are in that situation. You got ants crawling all over you and biting you, and you can't show a thing, and you have to be witty and funny and positive and so on. Because if you don't do that, then you'll end up with even more fire ants, right? It'd be like, well, if you go to your friends' houses, then the fire ants calm down and they won't bite you for a while. But you're only going to get invited to your friends' houses if you truly get everyone to believe there's no such thing as fire ants. So this is a messed up situation for reality processing, right? Because you are having your balls bitten off with these red hot pincers, like these horrible pincers, you got your balls getting bitten off, and you got to pretend that there's no such thing as fire ants. And the best way to pretend that there's no such thing as fire ants is to truly believe that there's no such thing as fire ants. So you have to completely dissociate from your body. You have to numb yourself. And when the horrible sensations of being bitten in your nether regions filter through to your consciousness, you have to wildly push it away, because the moment that you say, "Ow, I'm being bitten," you get bitten a whole lot more and you never get any relief. And that's what society demands. Society demands that the victims of child abuse shut up about it, don't talk about it, because to talk about it reveals that society is kind of evil, because society claims to care about children, but the last thing that society wants is for children to actually complain, right? Because there's all these people who are like, refugees welcome, and we got to help the children in Africa, we got to do this. But the moment that somebody in their friend group says, "I'm being abused or neglected at home," everybody gets real uncomfortable and doesn't want to talk about it. And then you'll be ostracized. And then you, by being ostracized, you have to spend more and more time at home being abused, beaten up, neglected. Like, I had friends with cottages, and I was extremely desperate to get invitations to those cottages. And so when I would get invitations to the cottages, I would be an absolutely fantastic guest. I would try and tell funny stories. I would bring up interesting topics. I worked like a dog on these cottages, because there's always something to do at a cottage. Like, I would dig up and help move outhouses. I would dig wells. I would chop wood. I would do almost anything and everything with no complaint and with enthusiasm to make my stay up at these cottages as positive as humanly possible for everyone involved, so that I got sometimes 2, sometimes even 3 days away from my home. Now, when I got to go and work up north, gold panning prospecting for 1.5 years, I was happy about that too, because it was way better being in a tent in minus 40 degree weather than it was being at home. It was better slogging my way through deep snowdrifts in snowshoes with 80 pounds of drill bits on my back than it was being at home. So I made sure I did a really good job and didn't get fired, right? Because being fired meant being home. It's the same thing with working, right? I didn't want to be home. If I'm working, I get the double benefit of not being at home because I'm working and then also having some money to go out and not be at home because I've got some money to spend. Because if I'm broke, I'm kind of home, especially as I sort of moved on in my teen years. So I was a very enthusiastic and positive and helpful and hard worker. It was the same thing with dating. When I was dating, I very rarely had my dates over at my house for reasons that you can completely imagine, because it was a sort of low-rent, pathetic mess. And it was not so bad, of course, when my mother was gone. It was about the age of 15 onwards. But then she came back. She just kind of showed up back later. But if I dated, I get to go out on dates, which means not being at home. And also, I get to go over to my girlfriend's place, which was, you know, she's living at home as a teenager, right? So I get to go over to my girlfriend's parents' place. Always, always, always much nicer than mine. So even the dating had all of this. But I couldn't tell anyone about any of this, because the moment you say why you're doing something, you can't do it anymore. The moment you admit the existence of fire ants, you never get any relief. And they just bite and bite more and more and more. So the false self is, the only way I get relief from pain is pretending there's no such thing as pain. The only way I get relief from abuse and violence and neglect and craziness is to pretend everything's great, everything's fine, everything wonderful, everything's perfect, I have no problems. If I admit I have problems, my problems multiply and I never get any relief from them. If I pretend I have no problems, I get some relief from my problems. I mean, that's effed up, right? That is completely messed up. But that is, you know, those of you, my fellow warriors who survived the violence, neglect, abuse, and exploitation, you know what I'm talking about. You can't say anything. You can't say anything. Can't say anything. I had a friend once who was talking about another guy that I knew and said, you know, that guy came over with me once after school and he just disappeared into my basement. And he was down there for like 2 hours. I was making some food or doing something upstairs. And I eventually went down and found him. He was just sitting in a couch, like staring at the wall. And I'm like, okay, time to go. And I've never invited him over again. And he made this story, of course, like, this guy, so weird. Like, why would he do that? Just disappear into the basement and stare at a wall. And it's like, I know why. I know why. Because he was being preyed upon at home. And you were a sanctuary. Now, of course, you could have asked him, why did you come over, go to my basement and stare at a wall? Like, is that, what's going on? Are you okay? Like, no, we can't have any of that. Like, honestly, not kidding. Can't have any of that. You've just got to say, well, that guy's weird. So I'm never going to invite him over again because he's a weirdo, right? And we all know this, right? So you've got to not be a weirdo in order to get relief from all of the horror and pain that's making you, quote, weird. You have to pretend to be the opposite of who you are in order to gain relief from what's inflicted on you. Only if you convince the doctor that you're in no pain whatsoever, can you get even the slightest relief from pain. I will give you the pain relievers on the absolute condition that you do not tell me that you're in any pain at all. In fact, you don't even hint at it. In fact, you don't even say that you're at the doctor's. And that is the reality. That is the reality of the false self, right? That is the reality of the false self. The false self is there to give you relief from pain and horror by creating an absolute facade that you are not experiencing any pain or any horror. Because the moment you admit to any pain or horror, the pain or horror multiplies almost infinitely. The moment you admit, even to yourself, that you're dying of thirst, all of the oases around you in the desert disappear and you die in the dirt and the grit and the dust and the sand. You only get to fly if you disbelieve in gravity. The moment that you are concerned about gravity, you plummet to your absolute grim, splattered death. And of course, I know this, right? Because in particular, when I started talking about child abuse in my show, then I got attacked and castigated and called a cult leader and, you know, reputational destruction and attack upon my source of income and, you know, threats against family, like, and myself. So that is the reality. You see too much too soon. You understand too well that all the people around you who claim to be good, virtuous, kind, nice, lovely people will absolutely throw you back into hell the moment that you complain or talk about or bring up the topic of being abused. And even on the times when my mother would, for some reason or another, end up at one of my friend's parents' places, their houses, with her deeply strange and uncanny valley bizarreness, lack of eye contact, whispered speech, strange odors. "Oh, it's Molyneux, so nice to see you, blah, blah, blah." I mean, I remember being at a friend's place. My mother was over for some reason I can't possibly remember, and she went upstairs and went to bed. I mean, I know it's not funny, but again, it's so long ago now. This is like mid-teens. It's like more than 40 years ago, right? So that is the reality. That is the reality. Nobody ever says, "Gee, is your mom okay?" And of course, as you know, if you've listened to my show for a while, when my mother was institutionalized, like brought to a mental asylum, and I went to visit her, nobody asked, "Hey, you know, she's a single mom. How are you living? Do you have any money? Do you have any relatives?" Like, nobody asked. They don't care. They don't care. So society exists, and this is, of course, what child abusers rely upon. Society exists to cover up and ignore and punish anybody who talks about crimes committed against children. That is society's foundational obligation. And of course, we can see extreme cases like the assault in the most egregious ways upon little girls, and of course, sometimes little boys in other countries and so on. But society exists to cover up the abuse of children and to bribe children with relief from their symptoms if they agree to cover up the crimes and pretend the crimes don't exist and that everything's fine and everything's good. In the same way that organized crime will try to destroy you in every conceivable way if you talk about their crimes, but they will either leave you alone or maybe give you a couple of bonuses if you shut up and pretend there's no such thing as organized crime, especially if you're the one being preyed upon. Society is a criminal conspiracy against children, which relies upon rewarding children with a slight alleviation of symptoms if they deny the abuse and punishing them and throwing them back into hell if they acknowledge the abuse. And this may sound harsh, and I understand that. And if you didn't go through any of this, I mean, I'm genuinely happy for you. And of course, that's the goal, is to have more peaceful parenting and special care and thoughtfulness and consideration towards children. But if you're like, "What? It's crazy. Like, listen, like, this can't be." Well, think back to your own childhood. Think back to your own teenage years in particular. There were weirdo kids, quote, weirdo kids, right? There were kids who were dysfunctional, kids who were smelly, the pig pen, right? Beep and pig pen is a joke character in the old Charles Schulz comic Peanuts. And Charlie Brown was a neurotic, self-loathing child, and nobody asks where that comes from. And Lucy was a very vain, loud, sadistic narcissist. Nobody ever asks where that comes from. Pigpen was stinky and smelly. Nobody ever asks where that comes from, right? It's just like kind of cute and funny, right? Linus was an occasionally cruel, pompous theologian who had no sympathy for those around him, really, and nobody really ever asked where that comes from, right? So you can think back to the kids who were weirdos when you were a kid, and what did you do? And I'm not blaming you, I'm just telling you that this is how the world works, at least at the moment, is there are the weirdo kids, and what do? You roll your eyes, you make fun of them, and you ostracize them. And you wouldn't have them come to your parties because they would be an embarrassment and they would be low status and this and that and the other. And so, like my friend who the guy came to his basement and just stayed in his basement and stared at the wall for 2 hours and then left, he's a weirdo and you're never going to ask what's going on at home. You're never going to ask what's going on in your life. What are you going to do? Well, all you're going to do is roll your eyes, make fun of them, make sure other people are inoculated against spending any time with them, and so on, right? That's what you're going to do. And again, this is not any kind of hateful thing. This is how we're all trained. I myself had a little bit more sympathy for this kind of stuff. I started reading about child abuse pretty early on. I obviously wasn't perfect, but I had a little bit more inclusiveness to this kind of stuff, right? And of course, you know, maybe your mother said, oh, you've got to invite strange Tommy to your birthday party or something. And maybe you did, and so on. But nobody's ever going to ask strange Tommy why he's strange. Nobody's going to ask the smelly kid why they're smelly. They're just going to roll their eyes at him. They're going to castigate him. They're going to ostracize him. They're going to punish him. And why? Well, we have a society wherein there's not any particularly clear or positive or helpful mechanics to deal with children who are being horrendously neglected and abused. That's one reason. The other thing is there's a certain amount of vanity. People don't want to know just how lucky they are. My friends who were raised in reasonably good households, they took that good fortune as their own personal virtue. You know, like, hey, I'm really socially skilled. But I was like, well, good for you, man. Your parents are very socially skilled. You know, that's like some kid growing up in Japan bragging that he knows Japanese. It's like, well, good for you, man. You were raised in Japan and your parents spoke Japanese, so you speak Japanese. Whoop-de-doo, good for you. But don't think that that's some sort of thing you earned, right? Don't think that's... And so people, they don't want to think about the immense good fortune that they've had at all. They want to pretend that they're somehow better. Like, well, I am better than the weirdo kid because I know how to conduct myself socially, and he doesn't make eye contact, and he has bad clothing, and he smells, and like this, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. So I'm superior to him because I know how to conduct myself socially. And of course, it seems obvious to you if you've grown up with good social skills and parents who have good social skills, it totally comes naturally to you. And therefore, it's very tough for you to say, well, there but for the grace of God go I. If I'd been brought up in that kid's household, I too would be a weirdo. And it's humbling, right? You understand? It's very, very, very humbling to realize just how lucky you are if you're raised well. And conversely, everybody says to you, if you're weird, that you shouldn't be weird. There are other people who aren't weird, and therefore being weird is your fault and your problem and your issue, that there's something deficient in you because you're weird. Right? Which is like the Japanese kids, let's say for some reason you end up having to move to Japan, right? Let's say that then, right, you end up being put in some Japanese school and you don't speak Japanese, and you know, all of the kids say, well, that's just weird, right? That you would be unable to speak Japanese, there's something wrong with you. We can speak Japanese easily. What the hell's wrong with you that you can't even speak Japanese, you weirdo? Like, there's got to be something wrong with you. There's something that's bad about you. Like, I remember there was this girl who came to my junior high school, I think it was, and she was loud, brash, obnoxious, and foolish, and she dressed badly, and she was overweight. Her name was Frida, and of course, everyone called her Freaker. Everyone called her Freaker. So that's not good. And of course, who knows what was going on in her home? I'll probably never know, but who knows what was going on in her home, right? But that's the reality. Those are the facts, right? So that's the deal. And that's what everyone knows. So yeah, the false self is that which says, if I acknowledge my pain massively intensifies. If I deny my pain massively diminishes. So you got to lie your ass off just to save your soul. And it's really hard to undo later in life, but you can. freedomain.com/donate. Thanks, my friend, so much. Bye.